sauces and some vayelach. I did make a bit of a mistake. The sheet that I had at home that said all the Shabbos times for davening and everything only said Parshas Nitzavim on it for this week. I didn't even look at it. I didn't even bother looking at anything else. I just assumed that it was Nitzavim, not even thinking about the dates and everything. I did vayelach last night, so we're going to throw in a couple little ideas of vayelach, right? But it's mostly going to be Parshas Nitzavim. Here we go. We're just going to read the Psukim here. Just to read them is unbelievable here. It says the following. We're talking about people that sit there and they say, when it comes to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. They're just like, whatever, dude. When they hear the words of these oaths, what HaKadosh Baruch Hu put out, right? And it says, he's going to bless himself, saying, Shalom Yeli, I'll be okay. Whatever I want to do, I'm going to go ahead and do. Said those who are thirsty are on the same level as those who get themselves all drunk. It's all the same, no matter what. Doesn't matter how much I eat, how much I drink, how much I take, how much I don't take. Lo yova Hashem slochlo. Such a person will never be forgiven. The anger of God and His wrath will go upon that guy. Rosh will call Alak Suva the Sefer. Then everything that was mentioned in the oaths of the Sefer are going to be upon him. Malka Hashem Shemoni Tavshin, and God will erase His name from underneath the heavens. An unbelievable little line over here. So he said the following. The Ksav Sofer says the following. A lot of people have the claims of God doesn't want me to be unhappy, right? He doesn't want me to be unhappy with my life, right? He doesn't want me to forego working, let's say, working on Shabbos and lose out on a ton of money, right? If I don't eat at those restaurants with those people and they're not going to like me and they'll think that I'm weird and they'll think that I'm just not somebody like that, it might even be a massive Chilul Hashem if I don't eat with them in these places. HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't want us to act superior to everybody else. We should be equal to everybody else. We should act like them as much as we can. And then they equalize it by saying, listen, if only we lived in Eretz Yisrael with just Jews, hard to say that now, but if only we lived in Eretz Yisrael with just Jews and we only had Jews around us, then we could act like Jews, but the way we are, I think it's the best thing for us to live the same way it is by anybody else. Now, it is true that HaKadosh Baruch Hu never wants us to be unhappy. It's true that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not out to hurt us. The only time there is a mitzvah, it's funny, there are two mitzvahs that are out there to injure a person, to allow a person to be hurt, so to speak. Everybody can guess what one of them is. One of them is, you might not remember it, but you all had it. Bris Mila, that's the obvious one. A Bris Mila to be able to go, in which there's pain, but he does it at the optimal time. The eighth day, according to the famous diet, whatever it is, you know, that it's supposed to be the time when the blood platelets are able to come back quicker, and that's supposed to be the optimal time to be able to have a Bris Mila, whatever it is. That's that. And number two. No, Gola Adam is interesting, but it might not be a mitzvah, only according to one opinion. Rabbi Shmuel says it's a reshus, right? No, this week's, I mean, technically I shouldn't say this week's partial. This in another 2 weeks, Yom Kippur. Yom Kippur is to be ma'ane es nafshoseichem, to afflict yourself. And even then, we all know that Bris Mila is to connect us with all the other Jews out there at the most optimal time possible in order to do something, some type of mysterious method is out there. We know what Yom Kippur is. Yom Kippur is a day of absolute kapara and slicha, and the point of the fasting is to get us in the mood to realize what kind of a day it is. It's not just to afflict us or to hurt us. It is true. HaKadosh Baruch Hu does not want us to be out there, but the answer cannot be, let's start doing what everybody else is doing. We have to answer another question. You have to answer is why we're out there in the first place. Why aren't we all in Eretz Yisrael in the best place where we can all grow together? Why are we out in Golos in places where we don't want to be? Why shouldn't we be in the right places? That already is a solid question. And the answer is we messed it up for ourselves. We did things that allowed ourselves to be kicked out. Now we're in position where there's people around us and we want to look as good as we can in their eyes. It's not that a Kadosh Baruch Hu wants us to be out there, so therefore we don't have to do whatever we want, whatever it is that we have to do. It's not like that. It's let's do something to get us back to the best situation for us, which is allow everybody to be doing the right thing in Eretz Yisrael together. Impossible? It somewhat sounds that way, especially the way that all religious things go on in Eretz Yisrael nowadays, but the idea is there. The idea is that. And if a person says, forget it, now that I'm out there, I'm just going to give up, and I'm just going to give up all hope and say, forget it, I'm out completely, such a person that HaKadosh Baruch Hu can't forgive. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, well, what do you want? You're missing the whole point of being out there in Golos in order to work your way back. You're missing out on that idea. And when a person does have those thoughts, that in other lands he doesn't have to do whatever he needs to do, for that, HaKadosh Baruch Hu ends off that third Aliyah, and he says, HaNitzros L'Hashem Elokeinu. The hidden reasons, the reasons for any mitzvah, the reasons why we get involved, that's for HaKadosh Baruch Hu, HaNiklos. But what God told us to do, that's L'Nu L'Vaneinu Ad Olam. That's for us to do forever. We can't go against that. We can't go up against that and say to ourselves, now we don't have to do that mitzvah. Probably it doesn't apply outside of ourselves. That's not for us. HaNiklos, those that are revealed straight to us, that are, we're told to do, we do. L'Nu L'Vaneinu Ad Olam. That's the concept. And it's careful. It's not only for us, for all of our children, for everything like that. That's the little bit of Musar that you have in the beginning of the parsha. It's kind of hard to give a fourth in this week's parsha without Musar in it. Now, there's another line. It says, you should get rid of all of your titles. To love God with all of your heart and with all of your soul, so for your life, for the sake of your own life. The question the Chofetz Chaim asks is, why are we thanking God for our life? What's the point in saying thank God for our life? We know the famous line from Shammai, right? That Hillel was maskim to. It would have been better for us not to have ever been born than for us to have been born. Now that we're born, we got to do whatever we got to do. But it would have been better for us not to have been born. So what are we thanking God for our life for? So Chofetz Chaim gave a mashal. You can just imagine this happening to you. A guy is walking down the banks of a river. He's walking down the banks of a river, he hears screams calling out from the river. Clearly somebody is drowned and somebody is going down this fast-paced moving river. This guy's a great swimmer. Jumps inside, grabs the guy that's inside there, pulls him out to the side, is able to save the guy, is able to pump out all the water from his system, saves him, finds out it's the prince, the king's only son. He brings him back to the palace. The king realizes what happens, sees that this man has just saved his son's life. He says, anything you want. Anything you want. The guy said, what do I ask from the king? He had no idea. This guy's a regular peasant. He has never seen riches before. He has no clue what to do. So the king says to him, you know what? I'll give you something. I'm going to give you tons of sacks. Tons of sacks. Just big sacks. Okay? I'm going to let you go into my treasure room, where I have all of my treasures, all of my money, everything I own. You'll go into it, and you get to fill the sacks. Whatever you can fill in a total of 24 hours, during that entire period of 24 hours, whatever you fill up, whatever you're able to put inside, whatever you can fit inside, you get to keep all of it. It's all yours. So that's what you get to do. What do you think? Obviously, his eyes light up. I mean, this is unbelievable. Goes inside the thing, gets himself prepared, goes inside the room, and he's given 24 hours. They put him on the clock. The guard at the front of the door says, all right, I'm locking the door now. You have 24 hours. The guy doesn't waste a second. As soon as he's inside there, he's pouring stuff inside. He's finding the greatest stuff, the unbelievable stuff. He's pouring everything inside, filling up one stack and filling up another stack. He's tired. He's hungry. He's thirsty. He doesn't waste a second. He doesn't stop to go eat and drink and to go sleep or anything like that. It's 24 hours of constant work, one after the other, to be able to do everything he can. So at the end of the 24 hours, he's exhausted. He's starving. He's so thirsty, his tongue is blown up in his mouth. So thirsty. But he filled up tons of sacks. Unbelievable amounts of sacks. And he takes them home, after I'm assuming resting and eating and drinking, whatever it is, takes them home, realizes what kind of money he has, sells his small little house, buys a massive palace, makes a huge new business, puts money into this, that, and the other, and gets everything all out there. This guy becomes an unbelievably wealthy guy, gives money to his friends, gives money to his family, gives money to everybody out there. He is unbelievably wealthy, almost like the king. He's so wealthy with everything that he has. Every year, on that date, where he had spent the 24 hours inside, he makes a massive grand party. He invites everyone that he knows into the party, has everybody sit down, they have these drinks, food, everything you can imagine. So one day he got up, 10 years down the line, and he said to them, why do you think that I'm making this party? They told him, because of the great day they were by the king. He said, what do you think I was feeling at that moment? What do you think I was feeling right then? So they said, you must have been ecstatic. You must have been the happiest that you've ever been. You must have been like running around saying, oh my gosh, this is awesome. And the guy tells them, not at all. In fact, it was just the opposite. It was terrible. I was starving. I was thirsty. I was so tired. I was doing anything I could to keep myself awake because I knew that every second was a wasted second. I knew what was going to be if I wasted any second. So it was terrible for me. In the back of my mind, I knew that this was awesome. And this is a crazy, crazy day. But that day was the worst day of my life. The worst day that I've ever been through in my entire life. The most painful, the worst day I could possibly imagine. Says the Chofetz Chaim. the concept should be somewhat easy to understand with the Nimshal. Kadosh Baruch Hu is the king. The guy is you. Saving the prince, I guess, is, we'll say, learning Torah, whatever it is. And you're given that day. You're given your chance in this world to do whatever you want, whenever you want. To fulfill every bit of taiva that you could possibly imagine. But not taiva in the physical way. Taiva in the spiritual way. To allow yourself to do everything you can. We eat, we drink, we sleep. But the point is to make a good life out of yourself. That's the idea. We're thanking God, Laman Chayecha. You gave us the chance to live. You gave us a 24-hour period in a treasure room to allow us to grab whatever we wanted for ourselves, giving us the ability to do that. That's the greatest gift of all. That's Laman Chayecha. That's what we're thinking of Kadosh Baruch Hu for. Okay, now to go into my technical level. There was Mashkiach, who was in the Yeshiva of Rabin. Yeshiva of Rabin was run by the Chofetz Chaim, but the Chofetz Chaim was never part of the Yeshiva. He always hired other people to run everything. He was never a Rebbe, he was never a Rosh Yeshiva, he was never a Mashkiach. He always knew the world of the town. The Chofetz Chaim was just there. He was the man. But there were other people that he hired, so there was a Mashkiach there. His name was... Did I put his name down? No, I didn't. I thought I put his name down. Anyway, he was one of those guys that people loved or hated. That guy, that like certain people loved his musr, loved his style, loved what he used to do, and other people, they just couldn't stand him. So there were two very separate camps in the yeshiva. There were certain Talmidim who talked only like, this guy is the Mashiach, this guy is the next, he is absolutely, he's like second to God when it comes to everything, because they loved everything he said. There were other people who just couldn't, they just said, like, what are you kidding? This guy is terrible. This guy's the worst speaker ever. This guy can't give any good advice. The guy's the absolute worst person. He's so polarizing. It's either you love him or you hate him. It's just there's nobody like this guy. So it came to a point where the two sides argued so badly that it became a fight, to where people were saying things that they shouldn't have done, and there were even physical fights, fist fights, that were breaking out over whether the Mashkiach was somebody who was worth talking to or not worth talking to. It got terrible, absolutely terrible. Everything was held back from the Chofetz Chaim, so the Chofetz Chaim wouldn't know what was going on. But the Chofetz Chaim found out. He got everyone together, and he sat them down in the Beis Medrash. And he said, I want to give a shmooze to everybody all together now. So everybody got together in the Beis Medrash, and he said the following. He said, I wrote a sefer on Lashon Hara. Perhaps you know about it. Chofetz Chaim, Shmiras HaLashon. Wrote a sefer on Lashon Hara. I left out one halacha. I didn't put it in, and I did it on purpose. It's a halacha from the Rambam. The Rambam writes that if a person does Gili Arayis, immorality, Shvichus Damim, murder, or Avodah Zarah, obviously worshipping idols, then that person gets you a punishment in this world, and you have no chelik in the world to come. That's what he said straight up. One of those three, no chelik in Olam Habba, the Rambam's Tzak. And he said, and Lashon Hara is equal to the three of them. Speaking about somebody else in that way is equal to the three of them. Now, I wanted to put that in my sefer of Shmiras HaLashon, said the Chofetz Chaim, but I couldn't. Because I knew people would go crazy. How can you say you have no chelik in Olam Habba? How could it be? I didn't put it in. But the Rambam says it. And if anybody wants to look it up, it's there, said the Chofetz Chaim. He said, what nafkamina is there? What nafkamina is there to know that you have no chelik in Olam Habba? What does that mean? What does that mean exactly? Does that mean really, literally, you can't have a chelik in Olam Habba? So he said the following. Chazal and Sanhedrin Kuf Dalet Amud Beis bring an unbelievable Gemara. And I've heard this Gemara before. I thought of this idea. I just wasn't sure it was correct. And now I saw from the Chofetz Chaim, I know it's correct. He said the following. The Gemara brings down, they're going through a list of kings that the Gemara felt have no chelik in Olam Habba. Some of them were people that seemed straight out from the Navi. They were just the most evil people who ever lived. You have them Benavot. You have them Benavot set up idolatry throughout all of Eretz Yisrael. Achab ben Omri was terrible. Terrible, terrible king. And it goes through the kings. It goes through the people that have no chelik in Olam Habba. And the Gemara goes through that Chazal were discussing, the rabbis were discussing at the time, the Anshei Knesset Gedola. They sat there and they said, you know what we're going to put on this list? We're going to put on another person in this list, not just the three kings, we're going to put on a fourth person, and it's Shlomo HaMelech. We're going to put Shlomo HaMelech on the list. That he has no chelik in the world to come, because his wives went after idolatry, and it seems like Shlomo HaMelech himself went after idolatry, that we're going to put Shlomo HaMelech on the list. David HaMelech came down from Shemayim and begged them not to say such a thing. Beg them. Don't say it. Don't write it down. Don't put that in your lessons. Do not say that Shlomo Melech has no chelik in Olam Habba. They didn't listen to David HaMelech. They didn't listen to him. A baskol came down from Shemayim and said, how dare you speak about Shlomo HaMelech this way? How dare you speak about such a great king that way? Sanhedrin did not listen. Don Chikinesi Gadola did not listen. They said, lo b'shamayim. It's not up in the heavens. That's the connection to this week's parsha. It's not in the heavens. We get to paskin. We get to do it. We're saying that Shlomo HaMelech has no chelik in Olam HaBa. And then for whatever reason, a fire came down from Shemayim and singed their benches. Singed all the benches that they were sitting on. So everything they were sitting on all of a sudden started burning. And they said, we're not going to listen. We're going to say that Shlomo HaMelech has no chelik in Olam HaBa. That's our psak. And for whatever reason, the Gemara does not tell us why, they said, fine, we won't say it. But not because of these. Not because David HaMelech came back from the dead to tell them not to say it. Not because a fire came down from Shemayim. Not even because of a baskol that came down to say such a thing. No. They wouldn't say it for whatever reason it was. They said, alright, we're not going to put him on the same list. And they didn't put Shlomo HaMelech on the list. Shlomo HaMelech has a chelik in Olam HaBa. So Chafetz Chaim asked, simple question. Who cares if they say it? Shlomo HaMelech has been in Gan Eden for the last 500 years at that time when this is being done. For 500 years, Shlomo HaMelech was sitting in Gan Eden, learning with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He's one of the greatest people who have ever existed, probably on the right-hand side of God. What difference does it make if a bunch of rabbis, 500 years later, get up and say that Shlomo HaMelech has no chelik in Olam HaBa? Who cares? What difference does it make?
There's like an angel made her
deed.
I come over and it's like, Mr.
Mello,
I'm sorry.
You can't. That's actually really good. How does that happen? It's amazing. And here's what the Chofetz Chaim said. When the Pasuk says the words lo b'shamayim, then it's not in the heavens. That's not just a joke of we can paskin and they can't. That's not what it means. You know what lo b'shamayim he means? Lo b'shamayim he means if they make up sack, it is automatically accepted by Shamayim. Whatever they think doesn't matter. If we make up sack down here, that is the halacha. And Shamayim cannot go up against it. You think it's easy being a posek? You might be going up against Shamayim. If you have Torah to rely on, to base on your psak, to have your psak based on Torah, Baruch Hashem, Shamayim's happy with it. But if you don't, oh, oy vavoy. Oy vavoy. Shamayim looks down at you and says, you tried to make a mistake? You tried, or you didn't even try. You didn't try hard enough to be able to understand the halacha? Here's the pshat. When they would have made this decision, Shlomo does not have a chelik in Olam HaBa. If they would have decided it, they would have voted on it, Rov decided it, and it was done. If they would have said it, immediately they would have taken the Meter D. Would have come out, as David said, come over to Shlomo HaMelech and said, get out. Now. And Shlomo HaMelech would have immediately been kicked out of Gan Eden and thrown down into Gehenna. Even though he's been there for 500 years. Even though there's another Gemara on Shabbos Daf Nun Ayam Abayz that says anyone who says that Shlomo HaMelech ever did a sin is only mistaken. He's mistaken for saying such a thing. It doesn't matter. If the psak comes out that he has no chelik in Olam HaBa, that is decided. And that's why David HaMelech ran down and said, you can't say such a thing. That's why the baskol came out. That's why the fire came out, to make sure that they wouldn't say it, because it would happen. It's going to happen.
What gives the Sanhedrin that power?
Lo b'shamayim.
No. What gives them the power to make that kind of decision? Like, I understand
They reversed their decision. Now, I always had that problem. Chofetz Chaim doesn't answer that, but my assumption is the following. Certain people have the ability that even what they say is considered decided, and that's it. That even if they just say it. Now, we don't have that, thank God. Right? If you curse somebody because you're really angry at them, let's say you're driving and a guy cuts you off, like, you should die! That doesn't happen. But a great Talmud Chacham, who wouldn't let that happen to him? A great Talmud Chacham who says such a thing, it happens. Throughout the Gemara, you see tons of stories of Rav Kahana, people that say something, and because they said something, because they got upset, because whatever, the other person got sick or died. It happens all the time throughout the Gemara. It happens at least, I can name six times right off the top of my head, with Rav Yochanan, with Rav Kahana, with all these different stories, in which one after the other it happens. This is the pshat in Lova Shemayni. You have the ability to do things that nobody else can do. And here's what the Chofetz Chaim ended with. He said, the Rambam made a psak. I didn't put it in my sefer because I thought I was afraid what people would say on such a thing. People would say, oy vey, there's nothing I can help with. But Torah is not b'shamayim. That means that even if you go up to Shemayim after 120, and you say, I meant this with Shem Shemayim, that mashkiach should not be a mashkiach, that person is a terrible person, that those guys are not, whatever you said that was Lashon Hara, even if Shemayim agrees with you, and Shemayim says, you know what, you were right, you did do it with Shem Shemayim. Nonetheless, the psak of the Rambam still applies, and you have no chelik in Olam Haba. There's no way to get around that psak. So I beg of you, said the Chofetz Chaim, I'm begging of you, don't speak Lashon Hara. That's what he said. That was powerful. The people stopped. Everybody stopped. They might have had their arguments on the Mashkiach, but they wouldn't say anything after that point. That was the idea of it. It's also why the Chofetz Chaim, by the way, there was a huge sign that went out. There was a paper that went out in which they said it was terrible after World War I trying to collect money for the yeshivas. All yeshivas were completely destitute. There was no money anywhere. So the Chofetz Chaim was sending out a letter to tell people, please give money for the yeshivas that are all around Europe. Right? So he's sending this letter over to America. And they wrote on the letter that if you don't give money, you should be put in chair. You should be excommunicated. Chofetz Chaim refused to sign. Why? He held that if he signed it, it would be a psak. And if somebody didn't give for whatever reason, then they would be in chair automatically. And although it's more like colloquial, you know, you're just saying, like, it's as if they're in Cherem. I don't really mean that they're in Cherem, that you should really give money. So the Chofetz Chaim, you know how dangerous it is? When you go up to Shemayim, Shemayim is going to say, the Chofetz Chaim said, you're in Cherem. I'm sorry, you can't come into Gan Eden. That's scary, said the Chofetz Chaim. He refused to sign, he wouldn't sign. Okay, let's stop with that for right now. Let's go to Parsh Vayelech. How old was Moshe Rabbeinu when he died? 120. What was the average age at the time?
70.
Average age.
60.
And you have a raya for it. 70 is correct, but you have a raya for it. This is interesting. Okay? Moshe Rabbeinu wrote 11 prakim of Tehillim. From Tzadi until Kuf. Some of them you know. You know every single one of them. We say them. We say them every day or on Shabbos. Right? Mizmor Lasoda is Kuf. Tzadi is Tfila Lamosha. Tzadi Aleph is Yoshev B'Seser Elyon. Right? Tzadi Beis is Mizmor Shir Liyom HaShabbos. Right? Each one, you know them. If you look at them, you'd be like, oh, that makes a lot of sense. Okay? But Tfila Lamosha is number 90. Okay? It's Tzadi altogether. Within Tfila Lamosha, it says, Yemeshno Seinu Bahem Shivim Shana. The amount of years that people have are 70 years. Most of them wrote this. Being big brutos, and if you're strong, you live to 80. If you're strong, you live to 80. Most of them wrote that, which means the normal age. Granted, there were freaks. There were people that lived longer than normal. But the normal age at the time of Moshe Rabbeinu seems to be that it was 70 years old. Seems to be that 70 was the normal amount. Which meant that when Moshe Rabbeinu was 120, that was shocking to everybody. Shocking. Nobody could understand. Not only that, Moshe Rabbeinu is this leader who's running around, walking around, leading the people. He wasn't a guy who was sitting in a wheelchair, sitting by himself, you know, with all these attendants around him. He was a guy who was going out and speaking to the people the whole time. And that was shocking to people. Granted, okay, maybe you're going to live to 120, but by the time you hit like 105, you're going to be a vegetable. There's no way you're going to be able to go out and do what you're doing. But Moshe Rabbeinu shocked everyone. Shocked everybody that he was 120 and everything there. So it's a tremendous, tremendous struggle. And he didn't even look like he was 120 until the last day of his life. The last day of his life, the Ksav Sofer says that at that point, he looked different. He changed. It's by Yelech Moshe. He kept going. And then he said, "V'me'ev asim shana anochi ayom. I'm 120 years old. Lo ha'od v'tzei solivo. I can't do it anymore." 5 seconds earlier, this guy just went somewhere, went to go talk to the people. He was ready to do everything. He was fine. Now, he says, "I'm done."
I'm sorry, what? It's not what he's supposed to be.
What do you mean?
Rashi says that the reason why
he said it's my Yanos HaTorah.
I still have all my strength.
Beautiful.
Hashem's not letting me go.
Lo Nach Lecho is what they get it from. It says the wording of Rashi is Yachol Shetosh Ashkocho. Maybe he got weak. Tamal Lo Kalsa Ain of Lo Nach Lecho. Right, that his eye, his everything was good. Alamal Lo Uchal Ainy Rishai Not Alav Shemitlu Men Rishus Ben Nitna Li Yoshua. 100%. The Pshat Sofer is not Darshim like Rashi.
Maybe it was like Forrest Gump when he was running and then he just got decided like he was just done.
And that's it.
It's
funny because that's the second reference to Forrest Gump I've had this week. And I said, like, I think I saw Forrest Gump like half of it once. And everybody was like, what? It's the best movie ever. Okay, that's not going to happen again. But regardless, that was.
For sure did.
Yeah, but it is. It was. Yeah, it wasn't that voice. And I was just like, okay, calm down there. It's still like a sound. Okay, but I mean, it's fine. Anyway, regardless, you're right. Rashi does not hold this way. But seemingly from the pasuk, he was considered old on that day. And at that point, he had stopped himself. And at that point, he had stopped. So set success over. Why was that necessary? Why did it have to be that he lost all of his strength on that day? Why not just keep going, be strong, strong, strong until he died seemingly like Rashi? Why would it be that he would lose everything? Because it's like this, and it's obvious. When a person dies in the prime of his life, when he seems like everything's going well and everything's all good, and he dies right then in the middle of his life when everything's going well, people just are shocked. They can't take it. They have no idea how to handle it. But if the guy's getting older and older and older, and then he passes away after that, sure, it's a tragedy. It's still terrible. But it's like, I don't want to say it's almost expected, but you're not shocked by it. Just like, okay, we saw that coming. Rav Eliashib was not as bad as Rav Nachman Tzvi Finkel. And granted, we're talking about 40 years of a difference in age. But Rav Eliashib was sick for so long, and he was so inaccessible for so long, that when he passed away, it was like, oh yeah, we saw this coming. It was still terrible. You still tear Kriya. You still be sad about it. But it just wasn't the same as Rav Nachman Tzvi, who all of a sudden, it was just, he was there, and he was always sick, but you just never expect anything, then all of a sudden, gone. That's very, very different. Very, very different. You can imagine. If somebody's in the midst of his life, strong and everything, and all of a sudden, he's just not there the next day. Well, what? What? Are you kidding me? How could this have happened? That's where the shocker comes in. If Moshe Rabbeinu would have died when he was so strong and everything was going well and he was able to run around to the people would have been like, what happened? How could he have died? How could this be? How could this? Even though they knew he was supposed to die before they went to Eretz Yisrael, they wouldn't believe it. He didn't look it. But because Moshe Rabbeinu had been a little bit weaker, he had lost a little bit, lost a little bit of his step, lost a little bit of his strength, they started to see, like, I see it. I see it. It doesn't make it less. It's just, man, it's not as hard that way. And it was a gift to Klal Yisrael for them to understand it. And that's the idea behind it of what it's supposed to be. You know what Moshe Rabbeinu was able to do for Klal Yisrael, but I'm going to skip that for right now. The idea of what he's supposed to do. Let's go with one last thing. We have in Parshas Vayilech another line, which is unbelievable. Everybody knows this line? Esther mina Torah minayin. Where do we see Esther from the Torah? It's interesting. We don't ask that about anyone else. We ask about Haman, Mordechai, and Esther. Where are they in the Torah? Haman is Amina eats hazeh tocha. Did you eat from that tree? Mordechai, yes. Mordechai says Mordor, Chavishmeh, whatever. And by Esther, this is Parsha. Vanochi hastir astir panai bayomahu. I will hide my face on that day. Pasuk Yidchas in Parsha Vayelech. I will hide my face on that day. So that's what it says, that Esther from the Torah. Where is Esther? This is where it's supposed to be. This is a very scary idea. So listen to how it goes, okay? Rav Chatzko left the famed Mashkiach. Rav Chatzko, I mean, there's not much you can say about Rav Chatzko. It's not awesome. Okay, Rav Chatzko Levinstein was unbelievable. He was giving a shmooze to the Avreichim in Panovich, okay, to the different married kolo in Panovich. And he told them that the Chofetz Chaim once told him, okay, Rav Chatzko, he had told him that the war of Gog and Magog, the war of Gog and Magog against Klal Yisrael. Gog is the king of Magog. They're going to fight Klal Yisrael. That war would be split into three different parts. This is what he told Rav Chatzko. He said the first part just happened. It was right after World War I. He said the first part just happened. He said the second part will be in 20 years. In 20 years, and that war will make the first war look like child's play. Absolute child's play. That's what he said. Obviously, before anything in World War II, the Chofetz Chaim passed away in 1933. Okay? So that's going to make it look like child's play. And the third war will be in the future. And that war will make the second war look like child's play. Even the second war will look like nothing in comparison to what that third war is going to be.
Well, that's uplifting.
That's crazy, right? Said almost exactly what happened. So the Abraham were all sitting there. Who was sitting in that crowd? Rav Sholem Shwadron. Who's Rav Sholem Shwadron? You've all read the Maggid books from Pesach Kron. The Maggid around the Maggid, the Maggid speaks, the Maggid walks, the Maggid talks, like all the different Maggid books, like all of them. They're all based on the Maggid of Yerushalayim, who's known as Rav Sholem Shwadron. If anybody's been there, it's called Zichmo, the Minyan Factory. He was the Rav in Zichmo. He isn't the Rav. He wasn't a Rav, but he used to speak in Zichmo. He was an unbelievable speaker. Humbleus had a great sense of humor, was an amazing person. He was the brother-in-law of Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach, Rav Sholem Shwadron. He was sitting in that crowd, listening to Rav Chatz Kolbarovsky. He said exactly, I said, the Mechilas Arav. From Mechilas Arav, he got up and he said, please forgive me for asking such a question. But he said, why should you speak such harsh words to the people? Why should you say such a thing? What's the point? What's the point of doing this? Shouldn't we all daven for the decree to be removed? Isn't that what we're supposed to do? So why would the Chofetz Chaim have said such a thing? Why are you telling us this? What's the point in us knowing such a thing? That's what Rav Sholem Shwadron asked. So Rav Chatzko Levinstein, his face turned red. He got visibly upset. And he turned to Rav Sholem Shwadron, right, and he said, you don't understand at all. You don't understand a word of what the Chofetz Chaim was saying. Now, one word. Everybody was silent. Couldn't understand him. It was a pretty obvious message, wasn't it? Wasn't it an obvious message? Chatzko understood. He said the following. The intention of the Chofetz Chaim was not to scare people. He would never do that. It's not his point. He meant to say that the lack of emunah was so prevalent during World War I. Lack of emunah. But that lack of emunah is nothing in comparison to what the world is going to be like in World War II. During World War II, the lack of emunah is going to make the first lack of emunah look like absolutely nothing. The amount of hester punning that people think that things are just natural is nothing. Nothing in comparison to what's going to be in World War II. And he said, as the years go by, it's only going to get worse. The hester punning is going to grow and grow and grow. To know what you're getting into. It's going to get worse and worse as we go on. More apikorsen, more people that don't believe in God, more people that have pure denial. And the real nisayon is not the war. That's the hechitimsa. That's how the hester panim is showing itself. But the real idea is how the hester panim is going to grow and grow and grow. To give an example of what that means, Rebbe Chanan Wasserman, the Talmud of the Chofetz Chaim, was once asked, why is there a depression? Why do wars happen? And he answered, and he said very similar to this. He said, Mida Kenegamida, we don't believe in God. And if we don't believe in God, God takes away our emunah in other people. And if we don't believe in Him, then He takes away our faith in other people. If countries don't trust each other, then what ends up happening? Little skirmishes. If people don't trust each other, business cannot run. If there's no credit being given, and nobody wants to lend out money to people because they don't trust anyone, then you have a massive problem with money flow in your economy. The whole economy will stop. That will cause a depression. That will cause major world wars. And that's what can cause everything. The more...
recession.
What? Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
Recession.
Exactly. The more hester punim, meaning the more people think that there is no God, the more God says, fine, I'll let you think that way. And He takes away people's belief in other people, and all of a sudden the whole world is up against each other. Amazing, the Chofetz Chaim said. And that's what he was trying to teach them a lesson. This is what you have to know. Go into it and say the way to cure this, the way to get around this, is not to somehow pump more money into the system. It's not to fix the economy by little things, little deals that you're making with GM or with all these, with Fannie Mae or anything else. That's not the way to fix the economy. The way to fix the economy is to build trust. That's the idea. To build trust between everybody. To stop spying, to stop everything else that goes around, to trust people. That's the only way for it to work. And if you don't do that, then you're leading up to failure. You're leading up to a world where China owns American dollars, where Arab oil becomes extremely precious, where nobody in Europe has any clue what to do, right? And you have whole countries that are absolutely starving. Starving. With no food whatsoever when the rest of the world is throwing out all their food. That's what ends up happening. It's scary. It's a scary idea. I don't mean to be like an economist. That's not what I mean to do. That's the point of what he was trying to say. So in summary, we talked about Geshrirus Libam. People think that mitzvahs don't exist in Chutz Lord. That's never going to be forgiven. We thank God for our lives. That's the gift that we're given, just the fact that we're living. A psak down here affects everything in Olam Haba. Lo b'shamayimi. It's not a shame. It's for us. What else? He's dying now. He was old on that last day. And Hester Punim is referring to the three wars before Gog and Magog, or during the time of Gog and Magog. Stop with that, guys. Have a great Shabbos.